May it please the Court, Robert S. Henry for appellant. The key basis for the claim of lack of equal protection in this case is the extension by the state of the option to the counties.
Before we get to the equal protection, let me ask you something about mootness, because it affects our jurisdiction. Basically, the way around mootness, nothing can be done about the 2004 election, is that conduct is capable of repetition yet evading review.
Yes.
I distinctly remember, because I was involved in both, these hurry-up cases we had where we had a last-minute challenge to the recall election of the governor in California, and it turned out that we managed to review it. And it was something versus Shelley. I can't remember the name of the case, but it's the recall case. We had an en banc on it. We had a three-judge panel, and then we had an en banc. We had a decision. Whole deal. Also, I had a case on motions and screening. Every judge gets them every election year, every even-numbered November. The Ralph Nader campaign wanted an injunction to change something in the election in Nevada, presidential election in Nevada, and we just ruled. So I wonder why it's capable of repetition yet evading review. It seems like these things don't evade review. We review them routinely.
Well, Your Honor, as you recognize, all the case law indicates that per se elections are the type of things that are capable of repetition.
I don't think they say per se. There's language in several of our cases that say these election law problems tend to be capable of repetition yet evading review. But here we have a bunch of cases where they haven't evaded review.
Well, Your Honor, okay, let me take a first short thing to remind this court that I saw a permanent injunction against enforcement of the statute. That's not moot. The only thing that they brought up, she brought up, was
well, there'd be a problem standing unless the man says he's going to run again and the same thing's going to happen.
Well, Your Honor, as I indicated before, the prior cases are very liberal when it gets to mootness when it comes to a case of an election. And in this case...
Can I ask a question? Did you allege that you were going to run again?
Excuse me?
Did you allege that you were going to run again?
No, because at the time I filed that I was only running, it was before
the
election. It was before, well before the election.
But if we asked you and you had to file a declaration, would you say that you would run again?
I'm going to be looking at the number of judges who retired this next month. And as well, my opponent criticized the first pleading she did in federal court was to criticize me for bringing this thing so late. And, Your Honor, you also have to consider, we're talking about publishing of the ballot. I don't know the cases you were talking about, a recall statement where you're only dealing with whether an election is going to go off or election is not going to go off, or the traditional cases. We're talking about publishing a candidate statement in the ballot, sample ballot, and that sample ballot has printing requirements and all of those things. So I think I calculated in my reply brief the amount of time.
Why would that evade review? It seems like there must be a deadline where you have to file for election, and at that point, you've got some period of time between your filing and the actual election. How long is that period?
Because, Your Honor, it doesn't say evade review; it says capable of evading review.
True,
I think
but
in
how
my
long
reply
is that
brief,
capable of repetition yet?
Well, let me take
review.
A look at my reply brief and tell you the text. And I think I indicated
what is
the precise window that we have in this case.
That's what I want to know. What is the window?
Oh, okay. Capable of repetition.
Capable of repetition yet evading review.
No, yes.
I'm focusing on the yet evading review. So I want to know the length of the window between the filing date and the election. I guess the filing date, there's a span of when it opens and when it closes, and it'd be helpful if I knew both.
Yeah, I thought I had it in my appellate brief. Oh, wait a minute. May I? Oh, yeah. 113 days.
That's from the deadline for filing to the election?
Yeah. on 13 days.
Do you know what the span is from the opening of filing to the election?
Well, Your Honor, that calculated the soonest that you could do it and not run into a rightness question. So, in other words, if you...
I'm thinking once you file, you have standing.
But also, isn't there a kind of a strategy about filing in judicial elections in California where you have to file first?
And particularly in my case, you have to wait until you determine which incumbents are going to retire.
That's not a legal requirement, right? That's a tactical judgment.
Well, right. I guess you could file for a seat against an incumbent judge if you wanted to. But I think my figures, the 113, are not based on the waiting for an incumbent judge.
So I guess the question that we have to answer is whether it's impossible or highly impractical to get review, to get a decision in review of an election question in 113 days.
Oh, Your Honor, I think you're not just talking about this case. We're asking a question that's going to probably impact the whole Ninth Circuit.
So hasn't the Supreme Court done this over and over again in election cases, and hasn't the Ninth Circuit done it over and over again in election cases, i.e. recognized, without getting into minutiae about the exact time period, whether it's 3 months or 4 months or 5 months, given the way our legal system works, it's not going to happen. And I mean, it'll happen in a very high-profile case, like the case involving the recall election. But in a case with about a single judge running for election in Los Angeles, the whole legal system is unlikely to gear up to deal with it.
Yes, Your Honor. I think at the time we had the hearing on the motion for summary judgment or the motion for a preliminary injunction, the ballots were already due to be printed that next day.
Now, why couldn't you get review? By posting the $65,000 and litigating, continuing the litigation and the review process after the election is over in order to get the $65,000 back.
You can say that in any constitutional case. You can say, why doesn't the plaintiff just give up his constitutional rights and litigate the question in abstract?
Well, I'm not focusing on
and of course, you'd have to have the $65,000.
You'd have to have the
$65,000 too.
What I'm focusing on here is whether it fits the yet evading review.
Yeah, and you'd have to have the $65,000 too, and that also applies to
the other reason that if you did that, the county would have a complaint because you would have gotten the publication. The way the system works, if you don't pay the $65,000, you don't get the publication. Here, you would have gotten the publication, and they'd have a pretty good claim to the $65,000. The issue was whether you have a right to have the publication without the $65,000.
I completely agree, Your Honor.
Anyway, do you want to...
I do
have a very hard time understanding why your merits arguments are not precluded by our two prior cases.
Okay. Yes. Those two prior cases there are Jones, NAACP versus Jones, which challenged the statute based strictly on wealth, and Kaplan versus County of Los Angeles, which attacked it on the basis of a barrier to free speech. This equal protection challenge is based on the extension of the options to the various counties without any guidance as to a non-discriminatory basis for exercising the option. Now, defray the cost is a denotative and not a connotative word. We all learned in high school the difference between denotative and connotative. It basically tells the state the counties what it can do. It doesn't tell them why you can do what you can do or what reason you can do what you can do. But I think that my opponents automatically assume that then it has to be on the basis of financial need.
The Jones case, after saying that the wealth primary doesn't burden a suspect class or a fundamental right, so they're going to analyze it using the rational basis test, and then they go on and do it. So why isn't that the same thing you're asking us to do here?
Your Honor, it also indicated that part that had to do with the ballot statement was subject to intermediate scrutiny. And even if we use the rational basis test, as we've said before, when you say to the counties, do what you feel, implicitly for whatever reason you feel, there can be no rational basis. When you give complete unbridled discretion, there's no rational basis because there's no basis.
Wouldn't that be a really broad rule? Because aren't there all kinds of federal, state statutes and also federal ones that say a county that wants to do X can do X?
Yeah, but I think what you're leading to is those cases that says that they basically say, like Columbia River Gorge, that the Constitution protects counties.
No, does not protect counties, but
protects persons.
I'm not saying that either.
Well, I am then, because what I'm saying is that when you're dealing with a
I suppose that if we looked in the California, first of all, California has a system where you have charter cities and non-charter cities, right? Charter cities can have the authority to do certain things if they want to do them. I'm guessing, I don't know this for sure, that there are lots of California statutes that say a county may do X if it wants to. Now, it seems to me that your argument, once you cut loose of the First Amendment because of the earlier case law and make it a strictly rational basis argument, is one that is going to apply to all of those cases and say that the state can't give unfettered discretion or non-described discretion to counties to do X.
Well, first, without making that concession, I'd say that the First Amendment problem is intertwined within my argument, because my argument says you extend the option on a ballot statement. But even if you get past that, if we talk about rational basis and we talk about cases like Columbia River Gorge and Salisbury versus Maryland, basically what we're talking about is, the states have wide discretion in determining what political system is set up by the various counties. But here you're talking about impacting candidates for a state office who run in different counties. Now, I know that people may tend to balk at thinking about politicians as any kind of class, but even if your argument is correct, they're at least entitled to a rational basis. And to say that if you go to Los Angeles County and you run for judge, that the same communication you make with the ballot to the voters in the sample ballot, which, as California Supreme Court says, is given the official stamp of approval, is going to cost you $65,000. But if you run in San Diego, they've decided, or Santa Clara,
Who pays for the ballot pamphlet?
Who pays for the ballot pamphlet?
The county.
I don't know, John. I shouldn't.
Isn't that critical to your argument? Because if the county has to pay, then the fact that the county is making the decision.
But my argument is the extension of the option to each county to charge.
If the county weren't paying, if the state were paying, then there might be something to your rationality argument, because why would the county care then? But if the county is paying, which I assume is the case, it would be nice to know that. The reason for extending the authority to the county is because the county's paying and they should be able to decide if they want to pay or not.
But your statement presupposes that the reason they're charging is to recoup the cost.
The reason they're charging is to get the money. Whether they're doing it because they couldn't afford it otherwise is a different question, but they're certainly doing it to get the money as opposed to not getting the money.
Or they may feel that one candidate might not be able to come up with the money and another candidate would, and they might want to advantage that candidate that can come up with the money by charging the fee. We don't know why. That's the problem. There's no guideline in the statute.
You just said something I didn't understand. Can one county, say Los Angeles County,
change?
You pay.
No.
You don't have to pay.
No. But they can look at the candidates and say, okay, Bob Henry's running over there. He's our boy. He's got a lot of money. But so-and-so is also running. He's got some pretty good arguments to put in the sample ballot. Let's charge the money. Even my opponents conceded very late in the game that it doesn't charge on one year and not charge 4 years from there.
If I understood what you just said, you said a county can decide to charge this candidate?
No, 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 not at all. The county makes a blanket decision.
Okay,
The decision of the state is to tell each county.
That's all I was asking.
You can, yeah, yeah, okay.
Right. Incidentally, can you run without paying the money by just not?
Well, of course, you can run as Captain pointed out. You can run, but as we said before, the basis of our claim is that without any guidance, and this is just is it asking too much to have the state put in the statute that any county that who wishes to defray the cost based on financial need can do so by charging this fee? The question Justice Berzon asked presupposes that that's already in the statute. And they've made the slip of the tongue many times in the course of litigation below saying, if you have the financial need,
it certainly is in the statute because it's in the Constitution, I suppose, that if they were making the determination that you're suggesting, i.e., we're going to charge this year because we know who's running and we want to influence the outcome, that would be unconstitutional no matter what the statute says. So, not putting that in the statute has no impact. If you can prove it, you can. In other words, what I'm saying is this. If the statute said it's okay to do it for economic reasons, you would still have to prove that wasn't what they did.
Oh, yeah, that'd be it. And then the presumption would be in their favor, and a person would have a hard time going up and saying, and he would have to prove, yeah, you know, they know me,
And you'd have to prove exactly the same thing now. If you came in and you made a case, that if you run next time and you filed a complaint and you said, you know, the reason that they decided to charge was to get me, you'd have the same case you would have if this was in the statute. What's the difference?
But, John, I'd have given a magistrate complete and unbridled discretion to do something is even inconsistent with democracy. That's my point. Telling the magistrates, you can decide whether or not to charge this fee, as the language of Yickwo versus Hopkins, I love these old 1880 cases because they put it so eloquently. There's nothing in the ordinance to guide or control his action. It lays down no rules by which impartial execution can be secured.
Yickwo versus Hopkins, they had to prove that in fact was being applied discriminatorily against Chinese people. It wasn't because it was and didn't have conditions. It was because it didn't have conditions that gave rise to the ability to discriminate, and they discriminated.
But the basis of the holding was that it was total unbridled discretion. And such power hardly falls within the domain of the law, and we are constrained to pronounce it as null and void.
But wasn't the basis for it that they were, in fact, discriminating against Chinese people?
Well, Yanni, if you want to say the subtext of this is, like the subtext
no,
of
I'm
my
not
case.
The subtext.
It is a subtext, Yanni, because the main holding was that the statute was unconstitutionally, it was unconstitutionally, gave unconstitutional discretion to the magistrate, I would say. And I don't want to differ with you.
We're getting way over your time, so unless my colleagues have further questions, as you probably have.
Okay. Good morning. I'm Judy Whitehurst. I'm with the Los Angeles County Council's office, and I represent the Registrar, Recorder, County Clerk for the County of Los Angeles, as well as the Board of Supervisors. Los Angeles County has been charging for candidate statements for some 40 years now.
Tell me what this means. Subsection E of the statute says, before the nominating period opens, the local agency for that election shall determine whether a charge shall be levied. I don't exactly know what nominating period means. Does it mean that they have to decide whether they're going to charge or not before people put their names in?
Yes.
So they don't know who's running when
exactly.
They decide whether to charge?
Exactly, Your Honor. And as to your point of capable of repetition, I'll tell you, as representing the Registrar Recorder as their election counsel, I'm in court on writs all the time for every election.
I don't know what to do about this. We have all these cases that say, oh, it's an election law problem. It's capable of repetition yet evading review. On the other hand, we review them all the time.
And we get priority.
I don't get it. Why is it?
We get priority. It comes up all the time. And for judicial candidates, it's constant.
That's one hurdle to overcome, the mootness issue. But the other issue, again, goes to the two cases that you've already decided. I think they're right on point in terms of First Amendment equal protection argument.
Here's my problem. We're required by law, even sua sponte if it's not raised, to determine whether we have jurisdiction before we go to the merits.
Mm-hmm.
So we can't get to Kaplan and the NAACP until we decide whether it's moot. We've got this big body of cases that says election law cases are capable of repetition yet evading review. We also have a big body of cases where we review them, and I just don't know what to do about it.
You know, and I don't know how to help you in that regard, because I just, from my perspective, they are reviewed and we get priority. And
well, are you talking about in California, in state court? Or
yes, yes. But, you know, within the Ninth Circuit on constitutional arguments also, I was...
On routine election challenges as opposed to the governor or...
not necessarily routine.
I think that's the difference.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You don't get review on routine ones?
I guess if you want to call this a routine, in terms of a judicial candidate, in terms of a statewide office like a governorship, we don't have them all the time. Most of the activity is on small candidates.
What I'm trying to find out is we sit on motions and screening, and my recollection is that when I get motions and screening in even-numbered years approaching the election, we always do some expedited review of election cases, and I haven't noticed that they're all blockbusters. Some of them seem really routine. Occasionally, they're blockbusters. I just don't know what's going on. It seems like we're saying one thing and doing another.
I think that's probably accurate.
Is there any pattern that we don't review them if they're less than statewide office or something? I don't know what our staff attorneys do.
In this particular case, I think Mr. Henry did file an appeal and it was denied as to his preliminary injunction.
My recollection is that we have one additional issue to what Judge Kleinfeld's talking about is the Supreme Court. And my recollection is that we have some case law that says the period it would take to go to the Supreme Court counts.
Excuse me?
The period it would take to go to the Supreme Court counts.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's true, and I'm almost certain it is true, then you're never going to get review in the requisite time period, no matter how many somersaults we turn.
Yeah, everything would have to be on an emergency basis. The standard for our state cases that go normally to the state courts are that the challenge should be heard prior to it impacting the conduct of the election. And so
what we look at is our printing deadline.
And if we can't get it resolved prior to the printing deadline, then yes, it will impact the election. And that's what the judges in Superior Court look at. They want to know what our printing deadline is.
And then they negotiate with you about your printing deadline at great length.
And then they
did some of those cases.
And then they tell me your paper's due tomorrow.
Right. And they said, printing deadline, put back your printing deadline.
Right. You know, and for Los Angeles County, we have over 4 million registered voters. It's a long process. It's a complicated process. It's not easy. We're not like Alpine County. We don't have 1,300 residents. We're the largest voting jurisdiction in the United States. Elections in Los Angeles County are complicated, and they're costly. And going to the merits issue, in Kaplan and NAACP case or the Jones case, there is a rational basis. The state has recognized that they didn't want to burden local governments, and it would be a burden on us. We do pay for the election, and so we want to recoup the cost.
On the other hand, Mr. Henry has a rather modest proposal, which is that the statute say for economic reasons. I mean, that really wouldn't bother you. It was just
no, but in the other sense that you know, like in the NAACP case, to require that judicial campaigns are publicly funded, that doesn't necessarily go to the economics of it. That's more of a almost a societal issue. Do the taxpayers have to fund for people's campaigns?
Well, I must say that if I were, you know, going back to Kaplan, I find some of its statements not terribly convincing, that the cost recovery system doesn't affect a candidate's access to the ballot or right to participate in an election. A candidate who doesn't place a statement in a voter pamphlet will still appear on the ballot and can do other kinds of elections. I mean, as a practical matter, for all the reasons you're saying, in L.A. County, if you're not in a ballot pamphlet, you're never going to get your stuff to the 4 million voters.
Well, you're not going to get it to the 4 million voters, but query whether your candidate statement is convincing enough that it matters. Query whether people read it.
I guess if you were indigent, but people thought you were just terrific, other people could put up billboards and radio spots and TV ads for you.
You can go stand on the corner of Hill and First and give flyers to every person that walks into the courthouse. I'm running as a judicial candidate in Los Angeles County.
A friend of mine ran for governor in Alaska when he unfortunately happened to be broke. I had to lend him a tuxedo when he won for his inaugural ball. Other people paid.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I can't decipher, and that's why I cite in my brief that the person above Mr. Henry in the results didn't have a candidate statement. I mean, it's hard to say what the impact of the candidate statement is.
I have two fact questions. One is, I assume the county is paying for these costs.
Yes. Okay. If we don't charge for the candidate statement, yes, we do pay. Unless it's a special election and there's some scenario where the state's going to reimburse us, we pay. And elections in Los Angeles County are expensive. We, in fact, didn't get reimbursed for the recall election. That was very expensive.
But you still have the – you do not get reimbursed. And the second question is whether the ballot book says in it that – informs the voters that these statements are paid for by the candidates.
I don't believe the ballot. I don't believe the sample ballot indicates
well,
that.
But I could be wrong. That could be misrepresentative. If people don't know why some people have ballot statements, have statements in the booklet, and some people don't, they might think there's something wrong with the people who don't. Or they're lazy, or there's something else.
It could be. I would have to look. I'm not exactly sure if we say that. Next time I will look to see if we do say that. That's if you assume everybody reads them. I mean,
everybody reads them, then you wouldn't have them. So we have to assume that they're worth something. And assuming that they're worth something,
and then
if it's an official publication, mm-hmm. which usually people think the government is paying for, not somebody else, and it doesn't inform people that that isn't the case, and that it's essentially an advertisement, then I think that my own sense would be that there really is a sort of government skewing of the election going on.
Well, it probably there is the appearance, like I think in Kaplan, it recognized under the First Amendment issue that it's a limited public forum, that it's a document put out by the government, and it has the appearance for First Amendment purposes that it's government sanctioned. Whether the state,
yes, but if the government, if you didn't know that people were being charged for this as essentially an ad, and you got a document from the government which describes some people and not others, wouldn't you think that there was a good possibility that the government liked some people better than others? Because it was telling you more about some people than it was about others? Unless you had an explanation of why that was?
You might, and that's what makes me think we must have that statement in there, but I can't be sure. And that's why next time I will make sure if it's in there or not.
We're over time. So.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you.